everybody, and welcome to the Aggieville Alley Cats podcast. Welcome rain, shine, or anything in between. We're here to deliver to you the Kansas State sporting news that you so love. I'm Ace Edwards, right alongside
Connor Bouncesword.
And it is indeed rain. There's a lot of rain.
It's not often that we record in the rain or during storms, but today is definitely one of those days, and it's really unavoidable. So it's going to happen.
Yeah, it's supposed to rain and storm the entire day. So if you hear thunder, sorry. But before we get into this week's weekly recap, we want to thank our sponsor, and that is Greg Arthur. If you want to be mentioned at the beginning of every single episode, please be sure to check out the supporters link in the podcast and Twitter bios. And every single dollar that you can give really helps keep the show running. But on this week's weekly recap, we're just going to start from the very top and start with football news, because this was something that had been, I don't want to say leaked, but borderline leaked a few weeks ago on the boards. But the week zero game in 2025 for the football season will be Farmageddon in Ireland, in the Irelingus College Football Classic, which, you know, you and I knew about it, gosh, maybe a month ago at this point?
Ish, yeah. And I know that there was a whole bunch of hush-hush about it because it wasn't really a done deal. But, I mean, it is kind of weird for it to not be a done deal and get announced this with this quick of a turnaround from where we first heard about it. So I imagine they just wanted to wait on the announcement then, but I don't really know the timetable on things like this. But there's definitely been a mixed reaction. I'd say leaning more positive than negative, yeah, from the fan base, which is understandable, I think, because, you know, you lose a home game against a rival for a game that's going to be played on a different continent. So that's, you know, I get it. I'm excited. I think it'll be cool, but I understand why there are people that are apprehensive about it, so I'm not going to make a big fuss about people that are not huge fans of it, but I do think it'll be a cool opportunity for the team, at least.
Yeah, I think that's sort of where I'm at as well. I view it very similarly to the trip down to Arlington to face Stanford, and is that the first year of the show or the second year of the show?
That would have been the first year. Yeah, that was 2021.
Jeez, it's been a while. Yeah. But I view it very similarly to that, where I think it's a very good thing for the brand and for visibility of K-State. And that's sort of where I'm going to fall on it for a while. Will I be at this game? Probably not. I will not have graduated law school by then.
Yeah. There's a chance I'll be at this game. I'll be out of law school. I'll have already taken the bar at this point, but I won't have my bar results, so I'll just kind of be in legal limbo. Yeah. And so I'd probably actually, this would kind of happen at the perfect time for me to be able to potentially make it. I've never been to Ireland. My whole dad's side of the family traces back to Ireland, so I've never been to my homeland before, but it would be pretty cool to be able to make it. I've always wanted to go, and this kind of makes the perfect excuse to do it. So I've only ever really been out of the country once, and it was like to Canada, and that's just North United States in a lot of ways. Although I went to the most European part, I went to Quebec City.
Okay.
So it was definitely a little bit different, but I haven't done a whole lot of traveling in my life, so this would be the perfect excuse to get out of the country for only the second time.
Yeah, and yeah, that's sort of our thoughts on it. Don't want to dwell on it. We just wanted to mention it because, hey, we're playing in Ireland. It'd be cool. That's it.
Second time playing internationally, I think. We played in the Coca-Cola Bowl, sure, against Nebraska back in the 1990s. I don't remember exactly which year. 92. Yeah, so fun trivia question, I guess, if nothing else.
Yeah, for next time you're at K-State Trivia. But the next bit of news is, I'm not going to lie, it's probably my favorite bit of news that we're going to cover this week. And, of course, it has to do with women's basketball. I would argue this is probably the biggest portal pip cup in the Jeff Mitty era. I don't think it's remotely close. Gabby Gregory was a really good pickup. It was a really good coup from an in-conference school. However, Tamyra Poindexter was one of the most sought-after pieces in the transfer portal, was wanted by basically everyone outside of, like, South Carolina, because I'm pretty sure their roster was full.
Yeah.
And it was down to two schools, which was Tennessee and us. She ends up picking us, the 6'1 forward, who is the American Conference Player of the Year. You know, that seems good.
Yeah, super good. And it was, we did well enough in her recruitment that she was supposed to visit Tennessee, and we were able to prevent that from even happening. She just ended up committing to us. But yeah, this is, I agree. I think this is the best portal pickup in the Jeff Mitty era. I think Gabby Gregory is probably the closest, if I had to guess. But again, that's without looking back at our portal history super closely. But Tamyra Poindexter, she averaged 21 points a game last season, which is nuts. So she averaged more than Ayoka Lee did last year. And that she was good for 16th nationally in scoring. So really only trailing some of the best, like Caitlin Clark. But she is going to be an immediate impact. She'll obviously start immediately next year. Some of her best value is that she is a forward that can score both inside and out. She took 7.5 3-point shots a game last year, 32.3%. I imagine that we'll be able to cut those down a little bit, and I imagine we'll see her efficiency go up because she was doing a lot of heavy lifting for this Tulsa squad the last 3 years, because she's averaged double figures her entire college career. But she took 17.5 shots a game, 43.2% from the field, 71.7% from the free throw line last season. Her best season shooting from the line, though, was her sophomore season. That's 83.2%. So she has the ability to be a really good scorer. And you have to wonder if maybe taking just a little bit of the pressure off of her is going to make her into a very, very efficient scorer. And additionally, she's also a pretty good rebounder as well. She averaged 5.3 rebounds per game this last season at Tulsa. So she's very versatile, and she's going to be a massive asset for this K-State team that I think losing in the second round, I think they've taken this in about the best way that they possibly could, which is they've taken it upon themselves to make sure that doesn't happen again, because I think they realized that they were much more talented than a first weekend exit, and they are just making absolutely sure the next year that is not going to happen.
Yeah. I just want to toss a starting five at you, because the starting five for next year, it's looking like Ayoka Lee, Tamyra Poindexter, Serena Sundell, and the Glenn Twins. Whoa.
Yeah. And then you're going to be having Kennedy Brown coming off the bench, Zaya Walker, Eliza Mopp, and Taryn Sides. And then you're going to have even Imani Lester. She's down at like the 10th spot, which is a really great position for us to be in. We're going to be a super deep team next year. And we might just be done in the portal. I think it's if we find somebody that just is too good to pass up and really wants to be here, then we'll take them. But I honestly wasn't, when I saw that we had some interest in Poindexter, I didn't really expect us to actually get her.
No.
I had zero expectation that we were going to land her. And then just almost out of nowhere, we very quietly were able to secure her commitment before she went anywhere else. Which, again, masterful recruiting from Jeff Mitty, who we have always known is a really good recruiter. So great job from him and the staff unlocking this one up quickly and getting an instant impact starter for next season and just reloading the roster and probably making the roster better, I think, which is strange to say.
Yeah, because last year's roster was really talented. I would pound the table and say that this next year's roster will be even more talented.
Yeah, I think that's completely fair. And I told myself I wasn't going to get out over my skis for next season, because we really did for this year. And we ended up just falling short of where we wanted to be. But now with the Tamira Poindexter addition and Kennedy Brown as well, and who we're bringing in, and then just the rest of the team that we have back, it's like this team really doesn't have any excuses. And I think that they know that. And I think that next year could be just as good as this last year, or even better.
Yeah, because there are two, arguably three, legit WNBA players on the roster for next year. And Tamira Poindexter and Serena Sundell.
Yeah. Yeah.
There is no excuse.
Yeah. This next team, I imagine, I think it's going to be great that we bring back most of the core, because so many of them are going to have a bad taste in their mouth from how the season ended. So in an era of the portal where you often lose a lot of your team, bringing back so much of it is going to be a huge asset, especially for this offseason, to keep people focused.
Yeah, I agree. We've gushed about this ad for long enough. We can, in 6 months when we're doing the women's basketball special, we can keep talking about it. But unfortunately, there is one Wildcat who is going to be transferring out on the men's side, and that is the freshman guard, RJ Jones. Only averaged 2.4 a game, but, you know, it really is unfortunate, because I really, really liked his potential. I also really liked his energy. This could signal a few things, like maybe a few portal targets are going well, and maybe he just didn't see the really big path to playing time with the amount of people that are visiting. Yeah, it sucks, but if I were to pick any of the three freshmen to leave, I would have picked RJ.
Yeah, I think that was probably the odds-on favorite, because Day-Day obviously has a key role on this team, and he spent the last month of the season really carving that out, so he has a clear future here. And Buddy Rich, we kind of always knew was going to be a bit of a project, and I think getting his former high school teammate, CJ Jones, on the roster maybe helped with retention. I'm not sure if it played into it at all. But at the very least, Buddy has a ton of athletic potential. And RJ had a ton of potential as well, but was just kind of left as the odd man out because he didn't really break out in a huge way. He had his moments. But he just didn't do enough to separate. I wanted him to come back. But again, we recently got a crystal ball prediction for Brendan Housen, the transfer from Villanova, who visited K-State. We have two visitors in this weekend with Khalif Battle and Clifford Omorui. So that's three guys there. Kaluma declared for the draft, but did maintain his eligibility. So it's, you know, up in the air on that. I'm just not going to expect him to be back, and I'll be pleasantly surprised if he does return. Yeah. But, I mean, looking at next year, RJ was probably going to be, like, second or third to last on our depth chart for guys that were getting in. And that's not a slight at him. That's just saying that, you know, if the cards fall where we think they may, we're going to have a very deep and talented team next year. And RJ probably just was looking somewhere where he could get some more immediate playing time and development. And I can't really fault him for that. Plus, it would have been very confusing to have an RJ Jones and a CJ Jones on the team. So
that's the real reason.
So I understand him not wanting to have to deal with that, because it just would have been difficult for all the announcers to just constantly be saying the wrong name.
Yeah, many such cases. But yeah, that is RJ Jones. And now we can go into the Batcats, who had a massive series this weekend up against Oklahoma State. And this one we kind of had pretty low expectations for, you and I at least personally. not because we think K-State is bad, but because we thought Oklahoma State is really good. They still are. But K-State ends up winning the series 2 out of 3. And the first game was actually a classic game, 6-5 victory, extra innings walk-off victory in the last one after we kind of thought it was over a little bit. After Oklahoma State breaks the tie in the 12th by adding 2, K-State ends up pulling away and winning it by scoring 3. Again, this was pretty much an all-time classic series, but this was especially a classic game.
Yeah, this game was awesome. We saw a lot of guys step up in big moments. Nick English had just his second home run. He led off in this game. Just 1 for 5, but did draw a walk. Brendan Jones, a 1 for 5 day as well with a walk. Brady Day, 2 for 5, drew a walk. Kalen Culpepper, he had 2 doubles in this one, went 2 for 6. Chuck Ingram, 1 for 4 and a walk. So one of his better days on the weekend. And Caden Phillips, he was DH in this game, 2 for 6. Rafael Pelletier, he was 2 for 6 as well, and Pelletier had 2 doubles of his own. He had a big weekend himself. And then David Bishop, 2 for 6 as well. He had a key RBI at one point. And Jaden Parsons went 1 for 4. So a lot of solid but not incredible stat lines there, but about everybody at one point or another had a big moment, and that was the best part of this weekend. We also added 4 stolen bases. Brendan Jones, Brady Day, David Bishop, and Jaden Parsons, they all had one of their own. But yeah, this was a pretty solid day for the offense. 14 hits and 47 at-bats, drew 5 walks, 14 strikeouts was really high. 3 for Caden Phillips and 3 for Brendan Jones. And then we left 11 on, but at the end of the day, it's tough to gripe with those numbers when you end up with the walk-off victory.
Yeah, this is a game where we probably get frustrated because we set our target number for left on base is 7. We bring it up every week at this point. Maybe we should adjust it to like 8 or 9. Yeah. But, you know, you can't really complain whenever you get a victory. And on the mound, it was pretty solid as well. Owen Borma going 5 2/3, only giving up 3 earned runs, 5 walks though, which was 5 walks and 1 hit by pitch. So he gave an equal amount of free bases as he gave strikeouts, which is 6 each. But he did go deep into the game, going 5 2/3, 1/3 of an inning short of a quality start. But Blake Dean took over shortly afterwards, gave up no runs but 2 walks, but also no hits. Cole Weisenbaker came in, pitched 1 2/3, faced 4 batters, and got them all to ground out. Tyson Nabors then came in, only gave up 1 hit, but had 2 walks, but 2 5 strikeouts again. And then Andrew Evans came in to pitch the last 2 extra innings, and he ends up giving 2 hits, 2 runs, 2 walks, and a strikeout. So we got scared a little bit, but he ends up getting the victory on the day by virtue of the offense coming alive in that last inning. So congratulations to the pitching staff for having a generally pretty solid day against an Oklahoma State offense that is more than capable of spotting runs a lot and often.
Yeah, Andrew Evans really kind of got gifted a W, which again goes to show the value of pitcher wins and losses. But yeah, Tyson Nabors, he really looked like his old self in this game. He had some massive strikeouts. He touched 98 a couple of times on his fastball. But yeah, this was a clutch day because we had to score 3 in that last inning because Oklahoma State put up 2. And that came from that walk-off came from David Bishop, who scored Chuck Ingram. It was just a single right down the line to left field. Was able to get past third. So it was a huge day. And even though it was a for college standards, a low-scoring game, 6-5, it was really entertaining.
Yeah, it was a really, really entertaining game. And so was the second one for completely different reasons. But K-State ends up winning the second game 7-2. And this was the starting debut for the year for Jack Wentworth. So we'll start with the pitching, because really this was a game about pitching.
Yeah, Jack Wentworth, he went 6 1/3, gave up just 3 hits, 1 earned run, had 8 strikeouts to 0 walks, and did all that in just 93 pitches. So he obviously gets credit with the victory because K-State win this game. But he got Big 12 Pitcher of the Week after this one. So this was his triumphant return into the starting lineup after he began last year as a starter. And it just wasn't working for him. And this year, he was our reliever for so long with Tyson Nabors injured. But he more than earned his return to the starting lineup and was just electric in this game. He was fantastic. I don't really know how else to say it, but he was great in this game. This was the Jack Wentworth that I think we'd really been waiting for as a starting pitcher, as a formerly drafted out of high school, and was a highly, highly thought of pitcher coming into K-State. So we've been waiting for this for a while, but the wait has been worth it. So his first time starting this season, he gets Big 12 Pitcher of the Week. So
as one does. Yeah.
So congrats to him on that. And then J.J. Slack was the only other pitcher that we saw for K-State in this one. He went 2 2/3, 3 hits, 1 earned run, 3 walks, and 5 strikeouts, 57 pitches. So we've been seeing a lot of J.J. Slack recently after he only pitched, I think, twice in the first 30 games. So he's been a welcome revelation as a lefty out of the bullpen. And he brings a really great energy to the mound as well. And he slammed the door shut at the end of the game, and that was just massive. So huge shout out to both Wentworth and Slack for pitching a gem in this one.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to put it as well. It is verifiably a gem, because it genuinely looked like Jack was just bullying them for most of the game.
Yep.
It was really mean, but it was really funny. But in terms of offensive performances, K-State did put up 7 runs, and that was mostly highlighted by Brady Day getting a 2-for-4 performance, and then Rafael Pelletier getting a 3-for-4 performance, including 2 home runs. Rafi is on a heater recently. And then David Bishop goes 2-for-4 as well, and then Jaden Parsons, who's crept his way up and I think has officially won the everyday starting third base job. He goes 1-for-4 with a home run, which I believe it's his second home run in his college career.
Yeah, it was definitely his first at K-State.
Yes.
And I don't know if he had another at his prior stop, but this was definitely his first K-State home run. And I was at this game with my dad, and my dad called the Jaden Parsons home run, which I thought was weird because he hadn't hit one all season long, but he was right. So I'll have to listen to more on that, I guess.
Suppose so. But yeah, Rafi has been massive. Brendan Jones got on base twice with a hit and a walk. Of course, he stole 2 bases because that's just kind of what Brendan Jones does. But a good offensive day for the Cats paired up with an amazing pitching day. So we went into the last game feeling all right, given the previous 2 games, but then the game happened on television on ESPNU, and we unfortunately dropped the last game of the series 6-4. All the scoring was done in the first 4 innings. The this game and the Omaha game were kind of boring. I don't want to, I love baseball, but they weren't exactly heaters, I think is the best way to put it. But this was the return to the weekend start for Ty Rule, but unfortunately just doesn't go his way. And we used quite a lot of pitchers and quite a few changes in the field. And then I think we have to start by addressing the David Bishop injury.
Yeah.
Because he ran into a wall. At first I thought he broke his ribs, but he ends up running into a wall while chasing a foul out, or what would have been a foul ball. He ends up hitting, I believe, the gate.
Yeah, it was the gate. He sliced his leg.
Yeah.
And sliced up his pants as well. And so he was down for a while. There was blood stains on the pants. It was like kind of gruesome, but he walked off and
yeah, he walked off fine. Didn't play against Omaha, so I imagine he's probably. I think the designation for major league would be 10-day IL, but yeah, probably just day to day.
Yeah, but it was a outside of those first four innings an uneventful day for K-State at the plate. No extra base hits in this one. Kind Lotus led off this one. He went 0-for-2 with two strikeouts. And Caden Phillips pinch hit for him and went 0-for-3 with two strikeouts. So not a lot happening at that leadoff spot. Brendan Jones had a nice day, 3-for-5 with an RBI. He stole two bases as well. But an uncharacteristic day for Brady Day, 0-for-5 in this one. So that ended his long on-base streak. And he also had an error in the field at one point. Kalen Culpepper went 1-for-4. Nick English went 1-for-3 with a walk. Rafael Pelletier, he went 1-for-4 as well. Chuck Ingram, 0-for-3 with a walk and two strikeouts. It's been a pretty rough stretch for Chuck Ingram. He's just not looked the same as he did early in the season. He's lots of strikeouts as of late. Jaden Parsons went 1-for-4, then David Bishop was walked with the bases loaded before a gate almost killed him. And then Jaden Loebliner was a defensive sub for him, went 0-for-2. Daniel Rivera pinch hit for him at one point and went 0-for-1. So, yeah, not a super great day for K-State on the bases. Nick English stole a bag as well, but just not a lot going, especially outside of the second through fourth innings. That's where K-State did all of its offensive work, but they just weren't able to capitalize for the most part in this game.
Yeah, notably no extra base hits for K-State. In terms of pitching, it wasn't a horrid day. In fact, the back half of the game was really good in terms of pitching. Tyrell goes two innings, one hit, two earned, three total runs, two walks, no strikeouts, though. I think it's going to take him a little while to get in the groove of things again. Mason Buss goes one inning, four hits, three earned, one walk. Sam Roberts goes a third of an inning, gets a walk, and then proceeds to get a ground out to get out of the inning. Cole Weisenmaker, who's really come along recently since I think I called him really inconsistent, apparently he took that to heart. He goes four innings, only one hit, two strikeouts, one walk. And Blake Dean comes in, pitches the last 1 2/3, only gives up one hit. So, and hits a batter. But the back end of the game was really, really good for the bullpen, which the big bugaboo for this team has been pitching for pretty much the entire year outside of two or three games. And also two or three pitchers. But this was a solid pitching performance, and although it's a loss, you do end up taking the series up against the number 15 team in the country, which only boosted our RPI by like two.
Yeah. Ultimately, this past week, I think we effectively had no change in our RPI standing, despite going 3-1. So, which some of that is due to this last game and K-State underperforming. Still winning, but underperforming against a Omaha team that has not been very good this year. They're just above 300th in RPI, I believe, but still not the best day for K-State.
No, and K-State ended up winning 6-4, but two errors. Like, the first inning was garbage, really. It started with a leadoff home run, and then just a bunch of... Yeah, only two runs scored in that inning, but it felt like so much more because there were so many just unforced errors and unnecessary moments where you just started questioning, like, okay, what's going on here? And then the rest of the game after the third inning was really, really boring.
It looked for a little bit like we were finally going to really get the offense going, and then we just kind of stopped. And everything kind of stopped, really, other than a single Omaha run in the sixth inning. I watched this entire game, and I don't think I could really tell you anything that happened other than the leadoff home run, based off of memory. We used Tyson, and we shouldn't have had to do that, which was unfortunate. I would have preferred to be able to rest him during the week, but it is what it is. So I think you have the batters here.
Yep. Brendan Jones ends up going 2-for-3 with 2 walks. Jaden Parsons, who moves up to second in the lineup, goes 1-for-2 with 3 walks. Kalen Culpepper has a rough day, going 0-for-3 with 2 walks, but 5 left on base. Brady Day goes 0-for-3 with a run after a walk and an RBI, so he walked with the bases loaded. Nick English, 1-for-4 with a walk. Caden Carl comes in as a defensive substitution towards the back end of the game.
I had no idea that happened.
I didn't either. Rafael Pelletier ends up pinch hitting or DHing slash catching later on in the game, going 1-for-2 with 2 walks. Chuck Ingram goes another 0-for, which is, again, brutal. He's in the middle of a brutal stretch. Jane Lobliner goes 2-for-4 with 1 RBI and a strikeout with 3 left on. Excuse me. But the only extra base hits were Nick English, Rafi, and Caden Phillips, each getting a double. Brendan Jones does end up getting 3 stolen bases. Kalen Culpepper gets 1. Rafael Pelletier and Chuck Ingram both get hit by pitches, but
yeah. At least Ingram got on base. He was in a bases loaded situation. I was a little worried, and then they just hit him. Yeah, we walked 11 times in this game, and also had 2 batters get hit, and also they had a balk. So we were very lucky that for the most part their pitching staff was just pretty bad.
Yeah.
And we were able to just get a lot of free bases. We didn't do a lot with them, but we were able to use that to just kind of hold them at arm's length. But pitching, Josh Wintrob got the start in this one, and he's been a little up and down this year, but has always been a high strikeout guy. But they really had him dialed in this game. He didn't force a swing and miss in the entire first inning. And coming into this game, he had like a 45-9 strikeout to walk ratio. But in 4 innings, he gives up 5 hits, 3 runs, 2 of them earned, 2 walks, and then just 2 strikeouts with a wild pitch. 77 pitches. Not a very good day for Wintrob, probably one of his worst days on the year. JJ Slack, he pitched 2 innings, gets credit with the win, gives up 2 hits, 1 earned run, 3 walks, and a strikeout. So again, they really had our pitchers dialed in. They weren't swinging and missing very much in this one. Blake Dean, he pitched 2 innings, 2 strikeouts, a walk, and a hit batter. I think he started with the walk and the hit batter and then really settled down after that, if I recall. And then Tyson Nabers pitched the last inning. Walked a batter, got a strikeout, forced a fly out and a ground out. It's a little bit of everything for him, but he gets his 3rd save on the year. So Tyson stat padding here.
Speaking of stat padding, the only thing I remember from this game is A, it was a little boring, and B, the strike zone made me, as a former pitcher, want to die.
Yes, the strike zone was just horrific. And this one, it was consistently horrific, but it was
still horrific.
There's a way that you can have a consistent zone that's not good, but still have it be fair. This was just an unfairly consistent. It was consistent, but it was just a completely unfair zone. It was unrealistic. And it didn't result in a ton of hitting either. It was just a lot of walks. K-State walked 7 compared to just 6 strikeouts, and Omaha walked 11 just to just 5 strikeouts. So that made for a pretty ugly game. Nothing low was getting called for the most part. But you pretty much had to be hitting, I'd say, probably mid-thigh for it to be called low, maybe higher.
You had to basically hit a 1x1, like, napkin from a kid's birthday party at belt level to get the strike called.
Yeah, it was pretty brutal. I was close to feeling bad for Omaha's pitchers. They weren't doing themselves many favors in this one. They were not very good, but it was still a pretty brutal zone, and they weren't getting any help. At any time that, like, I thought there was gonna be like a makeup call, it was just no.
There wouldn't no.
So it was a lot of reasons this was not the most fun game to watch. But K-State, at the end of the day, does get the win. I was worried that only winning by two would really hurt our RPI, but I think we only dropped, like, one spot for it. So we're back at 35th, which is where we started this week.
Yeah, so we didn't move.
Yeah, so we, because we only went up to about 32 or 33 after Oklahoma State. And then after, you know, other teams play, it shuffles everything around. We were at 34, so we only dropped one spot. So ultimately, this last week, it did not matter. RPI thinks it didn't matter. Winning a home series against Oklahoma State absolutely matters, despite what RPI seems to think. But maintaining our position there is good. Right now we're projected, I think we're in the high 3 seed, low 2 seed right now, which is a fairly decent spot to be at this point. I don't remember. I think we were in the Terre Haute Regional with Indiana State.
Which preferable to the Fayetteville region, yeah, which is where we were for a while.
Yeah, D1 baseball has us in Terre Haute, which I would much rather be there than playing Arkansas or Clemson again, or, you know, anybody in the Southeast, really. So it definitely could be a lot worse. But yeah, this is a pretty solid bounce back week. We kind of sleptwalked through this Omaha game, but we survived. And I think in past seasons, that's a game that K-State probably drops, yeah, honestly.
Yeah. But the next series is a weekend series up against TCU down in Fort Worth, who's been really bad this year until recently when they've decided that they're going to get hot because, of course, you know, every time that K-State can never have an easy game. But, you know, it is Fort Worth. We've not had a lot of luck down there, but TCU isn't the team that they were projected to be, so I'd say we have a pretty solid chance of at least taking two in this series.
Yeah, I'd like to take one, ideally. If we can get one, I'll be fine. TCU had an incredible non-conference slate and then just completely fell apart in conference play,
because if the season ended today, they wouldn't even make the Big 12 tournament.
Yeah, like they just had a very, very weird season down in Fort Worth. But they're still a very talented team, so I'm not taking them for granted at all. And Fort Worth has been a difficult place for us to play. But, yeah, we're kind of now hitting that home stretch of the season. We only have a handful more series in Big 12 play. So, yeah, it's starting to wind down.
Yep. We also canceled our South Dakota State series, but we only have 1, 2, 3 Big 12 series left before the Big 12 tournament.
Yeah, and then just one midweek game. We have Nebraska coming up May 1st on Wednesday at Nebraska. The game in Manhattan got canceled back in, like, March, I think.
It was March.
And so they've been pretty quality this year, so that'll be a tough game for K-State. But, yeah, it's a lot of really big opportunities coming up for the Cats.
Yeah. You have any final thoughts before we sign off?
Excited for the draft. Hope some K-State guys go early and often.
Yeah, I agree. But for now, thank you all for listening to this episode of the Aggieville Alley Cats podcast. If you want to follow or contact the show, you can follow us just about anywhere at AggievilleACats. And if you want to email us, we're AggievilleAlleyCats@gmail.com. If you want to follow us more personally, I am at ACEdward00.
I'm at Connor Balthazor, capital C, capital B.
And if you want to support the show financially, please be sure to check out both the supporters link and the merch link, both in our podcast and Twitter bios. But most importantly, thank you all for listening to this episode of the Aggieville Alley Cats podcast. Or come rain, shine, or anything in between, we're here to lure to you the Kansas State sporting news that you so love. Stay safe, Alley Cats.